Emery Grove, Maryland, founded by freed African Americans in 1864, once a community where God-fearing African Americans hosted camp meetings or spiritual revivals. For more than 100 years, Emery Grove was a vibrant and tight-knit community, a place where even some of the world's greatest performers would stop by for a spiritual revival. But urban renewal in the 1960s and 70s brought undelivered promises to the town, along with structural racism and generational wealth gap. Up next, we'll hear from Emery Grove residents who are members of the Emery Grove United Methodist Church. They're working on redeveloping the town with a heavy focus on mixed-income home ownership, working to restore the soul of Emery Grove. That's next on the FAMI Podcast.
Thank you so much for being here. I just wanted to start off by asking each of you to introduce yourself. So let's start with you, Pastor Tim Warner.
My name is Tim Warner. I'm a senior pastor at Emery Grove United Methodist Church. I did not grow up in Emery Grove, but in a town similar to it, way up in Philadelphia, and have been there coming up on 9 years now, and grateful after that amount of time to begin to be considered an Emery Grover.
That's wonderful. All right, Sister Carolyn Taylor.
Hi, my name's Carolyn Taylor, and I am a lifetime member of the community of Emery Grove, even though, we did move out of the community, but I'm a lifelong member of the church. Pastor Tim Warner is my pastor, and I am also president of the historic Emery Grove Rotary Club. So I'm glad to be here.
All right, thank you very much. And Steve Hudson.
Yes, I'm a newcomer, but I think it's a delight to be considered an Emery Grover. And I first got connected with Emery Grove a little more than 7 years ago, right after the Charleston shooting. And I came because I thought that relationships between Blacks and whites needed to develop, but I really stuck around because I found a community of others who were seeking God truly, and it's an inspiration for me.
And I think that's a good place to begin, Steve, that you said that you came to the Emery Grove community right after the church shooting in South Carolina, Charleston, South Carolina. You're a Caucasian man. Where did you come from? And what made you go to Emery Grove United Methodist Church?
Yeah, so I came from Western New York. I grew up knowing a couple of Blacks. There was two families that lived in my small town. But yeah, really not having any exposure to the culture. And yeah, now I'm 60. 7 years ago, then 53. And still... I've lived in lots of different places, but it was here first that I'm now developing real relationships to understand just what the experience is. I was surprised talking with people in the Bible study. This may seem funny after the recent experiences, but it just seemed funny. Striking to me that people felt racial disparity, and it was fresh to them. Like, I was coming from a perspective that it was something that was intense years ago, but not so now. But it was easy to see that it was something that was fresh now. And then, as I say, recent events have just made it so much easier to see that for many people.
And I want to get to the history, because I think it's fascinating, history of Emery Grove. But before we go there, Sister Carolyn Taylor, were you there when Brother Steve Hudson walked into the church to do Bible study? Because, of course, like he mentioned, it was shortly after the shooting in Charleston, South Carolina, where the young Caucasian kid came in to do Bible study and then shot people in the church. And so were you there when Steve Hudson arrived for Bible study?
No, I was not there that night. My sisters were there, but I was not there. And they called me and were very excited to tell me that they were in the middle of study and this man walks in, and they were all very frightened. And he won them over with his calm demeanor and his sincerity. And he's part of the family now, you know. But that night they were frightened and they called Pastor Warner to let him know that some man walked into the church. So it turned out to be a wonderful, union with Steve. He's very strong in the community now and in the church.
And isn't that just it? When you think about how things happen that actually can dissuade people from having open arms in the church, something as devastating as a young Caucasian man walking in, pretending to want to do Bible story and then study and then shooting up the church. And then comes Steve wanting to do the same thing. And of course, that can dissuade people from being, well, not just dissuade, but scare people. But thank goodness, it turned out to be a great story. And Pastor Warner, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you to comment on this as well.
So the African-American culture, as I understand it, as I've lived it, has never been divorced from faith. And so existence had to do with what God has been doing. And in the culture and in the history and in the living out of that history, faith has been the source of resistance all the time, and also the source of collective mourning. So when Mother Emanuel happened, the massacre happened, I was almost distraught about the fact that a church just like ours, who was simply doing its mission, having Bible study and welcoming people and inviting people, had someone come in and sit under the counsel of the word of God and then get up and kill people in the same room. I couldn't understand it. It caused all kinds of cognitive dissonance in me, along with the sadness and also the rage of it. And so without calling a meeting or a council, I put a sign on the front lawn of the church. It was 30 feet long and 4 feet wide that said, "Thou shalt not kill God." And a few things down underneath. And it was, I think, to that sign that Brother Steve responded as he, you know, took his normal walk or run through the community. He had been around the community the entire time, has lived here a long time, but something sparked in him, less, I think, as a white man, but more as a Christian, that he agreed with the message, right? There was a moral, a religious, spiritual problem that we needed to address. And came in simply to affirm it. And he assumed that because the sign was out, the meeting was about that. And here it was a women's Bible study. But to his credit and to our great blessing, he has been back, started as a part of men's Bible study, and now is as well integrated into our church as anyone. And that message, I think, is the important one for us. Our culture and our faith do not give us an excuse to be exclusively us. It is for the purpose of reaching others and everyone else. And so I'm thankful that this was a harbinger of a multicultural reality that God is calling us to as a church.
Well, let's talk about Emery Grove, Maryland. Let's talk about the community. Carolyn Taylor, you said that you're a lifelong member of the community. What is your earliest favorite memory of the community?
My earliest favorite memory is, my earliest memory is being out in the yard in one of those big metal tubs being bathed in the yard. And I remember that very, very clearly. And I had to ask my mother, did that really happen? Yep. But I'm one of nine girls. So we had to share the water and share the tub and everything else. But my memory is... of so many people coming together all the time, in and out of the house, us visiting, people sitting down, having a meal. It was a very open community. And if anybody had problems, then you went to them. And if you had some problems, they came to you. And there was, like I always said, my grandmother had an open door so that people came out. And they came to her, and she had a little special area that she would sit head to head with them, and she'd pray and she'd sing. And we'd be kind of like off to the distance trying to hear what was going on. But, you know, we couldn't hear whatever problem that the person had, you know, but, you know, we got the whole idea of people, men and women coming together and discussing the issues and then, you know, coming together in prayer and love.
And the opposite of prayer and love is racism, hate. Pastor Warner, Emery Grove, I heard you speaking recently and you said Emery Grove has a history of racism like many communities, but tell us why Emery Grove is different.
So Emery Grove, the way I understand it, and I always feel inadequate in the presence of people like Carolyn talking about it, because I'm an interloper from Philadelphia. I did not grow up there, but it is the kind of place that I grew up in, where nobody locks the doors because it would insult your neighbor, where you can get a meal at every single house. And every one of the kids belongs to every single adult in that entire place. And we all sort of knew each other, right? That's common, I think, in small towns where people have to endure racism and all the horrors of it together. And they go through that crucible together and they come out a very, very tight, loving community. That was the ethic in Emery Grove. And I've heard that history. And at some point in time, this very functional, but not wealthy community became a victim because it was not wealthy and because it was Black to some structural racism called urban renewal in the 70s. And the short story of the very long, painful history is that our local government came and bought houses from people for pennies on the dollar, promising them the moon, the sun, the stars, and the sky. And at the end of the day, after they had property that they owned torn down with the promise of someplace to own when they came back, what they got was a great big shiny new recreation center and a pool and a bunch of Section 8 housing to rent, and really nothing they could own. What it meant for the community is that there's been a sense of mourning over the loss of not just the houses, but the togetherness. The usness of Emery Grove. And that has pervaded everything in the church, which is really the only leftover vestige of that community. So we have people driving in to what should be authentic, joyful, thriving worship on Sunday, coming back in for a very, very long, decades-long funeral. It's what's been happening there. And the history there is so rich and thick with God at the center of it. Emery Grove was a part of the Great Camp Meeting movement among Protestant denominations in America. I'll go to the park where camp meetings used to happen, where thousands, and you'd have to ask Carolyn to tell you about these, as I understand it, Black folks from all along the Mid-Atlantic would flock to Emery Grove to worship and to fellowship and to eat and to study together, you know, during the month of August. I can't imagine what that must have been like. And you know, across from where the tabernacle was to worship, there was a big baseball field where the Negro Leagues came barnstorming through. But this place was the center, spiritual and social center of that entire community, not just for this community, but for the entire region. And at some point in time, it was all done because of the structural racism of urban renewal. Our goal is to rebuild community in a way where people can repatriate to the community and welcome those who have moved into Emery Grove so that the ethic of that community can be the same as it was before.
Mr. Carolyn Taylor, before I go to you. Pastor Warner, for those of us who don't know what camp meetings are, can you explain what camp meetings are?
Can I defer to Carolyn Taylor, because she can tell you the juicy, fabulous details. I was not there, but I have some vision of it.
Thank you. Sister Carolyn Taylor, what are camp meetings? For those of us who don't know what camp meetings are, what are they?
Camp meetings are great gatherings that are taking place all over the country. Folks get together it's like a spiritual revival. And for Emery Grove, it started in the 1800s. And I often think about the people who were in Emery Grove, who were organizing to pull all these people from all these many areas, musicians, pastors, There were parades. There was plenty of food. My home was sitting right outside of Johnson's Park where the camp meeting. So we just went through a path through the woods, and there was this big space, and there'd be all kinds of cars everywhere. There'd be people everywhere. It was unpaved, so you'd go home dusty from your eyelashes and to your hair and everything. You'd be go home dusty. But what happens, people would, we were in August, at the beginning of August, we would hear pounding and pounding because people were constructing these tables. Like if you go to Africa, like when you go to Africa, you see the stalls that they have where they sell stuff out of. That's what they had. And so they had big pots out there. They had their potato salad and everything, corn, and somebody had ice cream cones and ham and chicken, everything. But and that was all taking place on the ground. But then the main focus was the church. And people came to this tabernacle to worship, and there would be services for Sunday school early in the morning, and then an 11 o'clock or 1 o'clock, maybe a 3 o'clock and a 7 p.m. service that were really crowded. And the genius of the gentleman named Mr. Fred Wims, he had a huge big a microphone that spread all across the community. Once he put it up on that high pole, everybody could hear it. So you could hear the music, you could hear the preaching, even while you, if you didn't want to go and sit and be a part of that, you could hear everything. You know, you could hear people getting, praising the Lord and getting what we call happy, you know, and you could, people came there to meet friends that they hadn't seen for the whole year, the whole entire year. And over my lifetime, there've been many, many people that I've met from other states who, if you mention Maryland, they'll say, you know anything about Emory Grove? Yes. Oh yeah, we used to come there for camp meeting, you know. So it was very, Emory Grove was the center of music. The musicians, the blending of the voices there affected everybody everywhere. And of course, those voices are silenced now mostly, you know, but we still have just a few living. But that
Anyone famous that you can point us to? Any famous names that you can run down a list for us?
Well, for church, I don't know. I can't remember the pastors who were famous, but I do know that.
Like the famous artists, musicians.
Artists, the musicians that came to the joint that was not on the same land, that was further down the road. We had Little Richard and Ray Charles and Tina Turner and those kinds of people out there. Fats Domino's, those people who came to bring music on a Chitlin' Circuit, as Reverend loves to talk about. And I was too little actually to go to those events because they, by the time that I got big enough, they tore the place down and tore the whole community down. But it was very exciting time of the year for everyone concerned.
Thank you. And Steve Hudson, did you hear about this history of Emory Grove?
Not before coming to Emory Grove, no.
And so, and I'm actually directing this to all of you. We've heard a little bit about the history. Let's talk about present day. What are we doing to bring back the soul of Emory Grove?
What a great question. And how well worded is that? So, there are several things going on. So there is on the physical plane, we have been, well, let me back up a step. Part of our organizing and discerning around, you know, what does God want from us as a church? When we asked ourselves deeply that question and sat around for hours and hours as a church to discuss it, we found out that the center of the morning was about the loss of the community, the physical housing, and we asked ourselves the question: So what is God calling us to do? And the answer that emerged from us is that our goal should be to rebuild community, not just to put our community back together, but to offer community to others who have now come to us. So Emory Grove in 2022 is no longer a place where slave descending African Americans gather to live because the community was torn down. God has sent now the nations to us to live. So El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, West Africa, everybody who's anybody is now in Emory Grove. And so how do we recreate a community with the ethic of the old one that welcomes everyone with Christ at the center? And so that's the mission that we as a church have been undertaking. We've been purchasing houses one by one right down the block, and things have moved glacially slow until they weren't moving slowly anymore. And all of a sudden, God opened the door for us to finish getting all the houses on the block. And so we've done that. And when we sought to a partner to help us do building, we're good at worship, but not so great at building houses. We don't know how to do that. So I looked to partner with Habitat for Humanity because there's a justice aspect to this where we wanted to in the way of reparations, offer housing in such a way that people could own property and gain equity so that there's generational wealth that's created. And Habitat's model offers that. And so we started talking to Habitat. When we talked to Habitat, we found out that the people across the street that put up all the Section 8 housing, the Housing Opportunities Commission, was looking to turn its housing over because it had now worn out over 40 years, and that they were also talking to Habitat. And so we started having conversations with Habitat, and those conversations led us from the vision that we had for building a community on the 5 acres that we own to literally leading in the recreation of the entire community. And we understood that move as a move of God, that because God's will was so strong and so clear for this community, because the move of God had been so profound then, that God is restoring it in this way. And so physically, that's what we're trying to do. But there are other layers to this, right? Another layer is after we build the houses, how do we create community among the disparate people who live here? And that's a big goal. So we organize, and we've been doing projects in the community. There will be many, many more. And the first step of that is just to get to know people. There are language barriers and culture barriers and all those kinds of things. But in pursuing those, we are learning what the community needs from us and how the community understands God. And that is leading to the third layer of work for us. And that is about how do we transform from an African-American church to a church that is really centered in the same way on God, but for everybody. That's all monumental, and it's too much for us, but we think it's big enough for God.
In essence, it's interesting as Steve, you're nodding your head. I can see you nodding your head there. He's talking about you, among others.
Among others, yeah.
When you hear Pastor Warner put it like that, what thoughts come to your mind?
Well, really, the church has missed out on the dream that God is building of one family where he's bringing many different people together. And we have not done that. We've kept separate. And that is a passion that I have that I'm catching from what I read in scripture. And I'm excited to see that it's stirring in other people within the community. And yeah, I just think that it's really what we should be about.
And speaking of that, what are your thoughts on this rebuilding the different homes and helping to recreate community? I guess really, what role do you hope to play in that? What talents and gifts do you bring to that?
Yeah, so I'm interested in both the housing aspect and the community aspect. And both of them, especially the second, is a huge challenge for us to change the way that we do things. Concerning the first, I have been supporting the church's effort to get the land in order to make affordable housing. And then in addition to that, a little more than 2 years ago, I purchased a home in the community. And before purchasing the home in the community, I went to a nonprofit and asked, I'm thinking of purchasing a home. Would that be of use for your programs? What kind of things could you do? We started with that organization, and now we're partnering with another one. But the idea in both cases is a house where three families live together, And at the moment, it's empty. We hope to have it filled again soon. We've had over a year, four different families that have been in there. But the new partner will be bringing in others. And so this is like a micro situation of the much bigger thing that we'd like to do in the community. So yeah, your people living together, needing to share a house. They have, you know, the separate apartments within the house, but the kitchen and dining room and living room and kids' playroom are all common areas. And so, yeah, this ethic of living together is embedded in that. And also, it's for people who are at risk of homelessness and other challenges. And besides that little micro effort in that's really in the same direction, one thing that I think that excites me the most about the multicultural aspect is I've gathered a number of volunteers, and these are from a few different churches mainly, and but others could join as well. And I think it's a great opportunity for people who have their separate churches to then serve as friends and helpers of the people that live in the house. And as they come together as a team, then it's a easy way for people to build friendship and trust who would never know each other otherwise. And, you know, this is an avenue for people in different churches not to have to give up the comfort of their own places, but can come together in service in a way that they're passionate about. And then it's just a context for this natural pointing towards multiculturalism.
Yeah.
Well, and I guess the other point that we could have driven home more is that his response is less to our Blackness than it is to his faith in Jesus Christ. He just believes this, right? And wants to do something about it every single day. I want to be around those Christians. I don't care what they look like. Bring them to me. There's something God's going to do with us when we do that.
Yeah, I mean, seriously. So Steve, you literally bought a home and have people living in your home.
No, he doesn't live there.
Oh, you don't yeah. live there.
No, I don't live there.
You just bought a home.
Bought the home for others.
Yeah.
Monumental. It's a house. This is Montgomery County, Maryland. It doesn't cost, you know, $1.30. It's an investment, right? I mean, it's unheard of what he's done. And yeah. he is really, this is not saccharine modesty. It's real modesty for Steve.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's the hardest thing to get him to talk about it.
Wow. That's incredible.
I mean, I'm a landlord, right? From that perspective, it's
do they live there for free? Mm. Low, very, very low rent.
So the nonprofit organization, through their contracts with government, subsidize the rent for these people.
That's great.
Yeah, and even and so the amount that the government pays is still modest. Well, they sent some fair rent guidelines, and so it's up to that. But
the point is that you didn't buy that house to make money off of people. You bought the house so that people could have a place to live.
Right.
That's beautiful.
And now families that were facing homelessness not only have someplace to stay, but they have someplace to stay affordably for them, and a place that is safe, where they can transform and become self-sufficient and be in contact with God's people. So the gospel is spread that way. That it doesn't get much better than that.
That sounds like something that would happen in old Embry Grove, right? But in 2022, it could be a little risky. But here you are, you purchase a home and have people living in these homes, in your home.
I think the message here, and Steve is here, he'll continue to tell you precisely what he means. But For me, there's the idea that we are preaching all the time that you cannot be interested in community at a distance. It requires some skin in the game. You've got to get in there. And it's going to require you to put some resources at risk. It's going to require maybe to put yourself at risk. You're going to have to talk to some people that you don't normally talk to. And you've got to have a heart for people who are on the margins, because the kingdom of God is about people on the margins and bring them to the center, right? No matter how you cut it, that's the reality. Steve had a heart to do this long before he came to Emory Grove. But what he found at Emory Grove was a vehicle through which he could get it done. And God led him to do that. And so, you know, there are marginalized families who are experiencing transformation, who are getting in contact with the people of God because other people are coming around them to help them become self-sufficient. And what else is the kingdom of God about?
And speaking of putting skin in the game, we're talking about affordable housing, welcoming new groups to Emory Grove, new groups meeting multicultural groups, in essence, restoring the soul of Emory Grove. Sister Carolyn Taylor, what's it going to take?
For me, the most important thing is that, like Pastor said, we can't bring Emory Grove back, but there were some great principles that were handed down. We learned how to live life in a dignified way and to come together as Christians. Like I said, the house-to-house thing. But we learned how to be honorable. I remember the men standing tall, dressed. They organized the original people who settled in this area. They started by they established schools and church right away. And they started teaching in their homes. They started, you know, church in their homes and then moved on to building schools and building the church, which still stands since 1874. And I think to pass down the things that are intangible is to pass down the fact that to be compassionate, to love each other, to understand each other's struggles. We see the communities coming in with people who are at a place where we were maybe 50 years ago who need help. And so we can understand what they're going through because we had to go through it without water, without running water in a lot of the houses, which is why, you know, the community was condemned. But there was a support system of helping like Steve is doing, helping each family, helping other families. And you'll find a lot of families in Emory Grove where the people had to adopt the children or even not even adopt, but just to raise the children of the families who weren't able to raise them. And so it's very funny, like, you know, when people died and stuff, I thought that was their son. I thought that was their daughter, but no, we raised them. And I think that's just so important is to remember that people need help. And now that we're in a position to help them, we can, and we can help them to build family, to hold family together, because we know how to do that. We know how to tell people to forgive, to ask questions of your elders, to find out what your history is, to know your history, to know the history of your community and your country, know the history of the world so that you can know who you are and what your place is in it, and to study and be intelligent. And I also crave that we have a cultural center that focuses on history, that focuses on education, that focuses on dance and music and art. I hope that we can have those kinds of things in the community.
And so in our last few minutes, let's talk about the future then. We talked about, Pastor Warner, you talked about building houses. So where are we in that process and what do you need now?
So the easy best answer is money. A little struggling church does not have an awful lot of it. We are, through our partnerships, managing thus far to do what we need to do. But interestingly, because of our faith, we don't worry about money because the God we serve has plenty of it. It's just not all at Emory Grove. And so people who understand the mission, people whose hearts have been pricked by the power of the Holy Spirit, people who see the vision are coming alongside us, as it always happens in ministry. I've never seen a ministry that's been successful ever in my life that had enough resources when it got started. It is our faith that begins the work that impels others to come and be a part of it. So we will need partners to help us get this done.
And speaking of partners, do you feel like you have help from the local officials?
Yeah, so we just had a wonderful launch of this project. Sister Carolyn and I, in particular, have had countless meetings with county council people and the county executive and government stakeholders to the point where we had on Juneteenth a press event at our church where the county executive came to speak along with others, all affirming the history, all affirming the mission, and offering resources to get it done. So Johnson Park is going to be renovated. The baseball field will be renovated next year to turn it back into its former glory as a Negro League, a big league stadium. We are partnering with the Housing Opportunities Commission, which is a quasi-government agency, to do all this development as one big project. So government resources are coming to that. There are zoning text amendments about height of buildings and all those kinds of things that are already making their way through our county government. And the county executive himself has affirmed this work and begun to put government land in play so that we can do the larger work. There is more to be done. There are people who are old enough now who will never be able to afford a house. It may not even be interested in buying one, but the recreation center I told you about before that was constructed is going to be torn down and rebuilt. And on top of that, there are plans to put senior apartments there so that people who are now seniors who want to return to the community can return to it. There'll be a plot of land that comes to the church that will be sort of repatriate the church in Johnson Park. We're not going to build a new church there, but we're going to build a social services center there that can be a blessing to many of the marginalized people in this community and thereby really, really complete the mission. There is something, I believe this firmly, I preach it and I teach it everywhere, about the African-American experience that God intends to bless the rest of Christianity and in fact communities all over this nation. And we are offering ourselves as a church as an example of what God can do in that way.
And let's hear final words as we close out. Steve, any final words from you on, I'm calling it Restoring the Soul of Emery Grove. Any final words from you, Steve, on Restoring the Soul of Emery Grove in just a minute? And then I'll go to you, Sister Carolyn, and then to you, Pastor Warner, to close out.
I think as Sister Carolyn mentioned, there's a lot that the community knows how to do, but there's a lot of work still to be done about the habits of how we relate to one another. And that was something that was also mentioned earlier in the conversation. So, yeah, I think that there is a lot to pay attention to, and it's not going to happen automatically. But I think there is knowledge of how to do it. There's interest. There's a heart. There's a passion. And I think that, we just need to start, and we'll see what wonders God will do as he works in each of us and in all the other people that will be part of it that may not yet be.
Thank you very much. And Sister Taylor?
Yes, I think that we need to lay down our prejudices. We need to lay down our hurt. We need to lay down the sorrow that we felt and reach out to people from everywhere who are in this community, very diverse community. Gaithersburg is one of the most diverse cities in the country. So we have this opportunity to give what we have, which is not riches, of course, and to try to help to build a future for our children, the children of all of those who are in this area who need our help. And I think that's the thing, is that we have to look at something new, something fresh, something that we can leave a legacy behind to say, that this is the legacy of Emery Grove, is to love one another.
And Pastor Warner, I forgot to ask you, what are you asking the community members to do? You as the head of the church, you're working hard, but what about the community? Before you give us your final thoughts, what are you asking the community members to do to help restore the soul of Emery Grove?
Interestingly, these are really the same response to your question. We have formed a nonprofit to handle this redevelopment. And from the beginning, we have included in an integral way members of the community who have nothing to do with the church at all. Homeowners Association, interested community stakeholders, whoever it is, because we want to create community. The way we get this done is every bit as important as what we do at the end. So how we behave, how we talk to one another, how we understand each other, our ability to create community on the way to community is essential. And as a church, we've been doing that for a number of years. As we've been buying these houses, we've been responding to every opportunity to reach out to community, particularly the community that was probably most actively involved in structural racism around camp meetings. There's a town down the street called Washington Grove that had a camp meeting as well that was all white. And so we have gotten together with them to make this point. If really faith does not operate outside of a cultural context, our cultural context has told a certain story in its history about God, that God's divided, that there's hate in the church, and that separation causes degradation. That's been the history thus far. So the question we've been asking through what we've been doing is, how can we write a new history? What is God's new story about what we're doing? So most recently, we gathered people from Washington Grove to and other places to talk about this history. We've been in sort of a study together around racial issues with folks from Washington Grove for a couple of years now through the pandemic. Out of that has grown a walk that we did literally together to go to the historical sites in Emory Grove and walk down the street to Washington Grove and explore those sites. And that has led to other events that we've done. We just had a big ice cream social where people really have been exposed to what the realities were, asking the questions, but who are we now and what can we do together? What is God's new future for this? And this to me is the beginning of beloved community. And when that happens, I believe God's will have been done.
Is there anything that I failed to ask that you think is important to mention from any of you? Just go ahead and speak up.
Just happy for another opportunity to tell a story. Thank you.
Thank you so much. We're so happy to be included.
Yeah, thank you all. Thank you all so much. Steve Hudson, Carolyn Taylor, Pastor Tim Warner. Thank you all so much for joining the FAMI podcast. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. God bless you.